I thought just to get some variety, we'd do some questions and answers. Okay? So if anybody has a question, it does not have to be relevant to anything. You don't have to stick to this subject. If any sub, yeah. Say it loud so people can hear.
Yeah, the story you told this morning that you told before about the people who hid under the Buddha's cloak and were still killed. What were they supposed to do? I mean, I know the refuge is in the teachings, but at that moment when they were being attacked and they were racing for cover, what are they? Were they supposed to study, or, I mean, what? What was the right answer for that?
I think you could look at the Dalai Lama's own example, right? He had the ability to raise an army at the last minute. He could have raised an armed resistance to the Chinese invasion, and he chose not to. He chose to run. To save lives. So I think that's one kind of example for us, you know. Suppose they're right there, and what can you do?
But the Tibetans fought. I know the Dalai Lama said.
He asked them not to fight, but there were weapons handed out at the Potala Palace during that incident, and flintlocks. Yeah. And some people fought. But I think his own example was to run so that it would save life, you know. So I think we can't, this is a very difficult question, you know. You see somebody getting mugged, should you step in? It came up in my own life. Me and one of my teachers were on a bus in New York. A lady's purse got snatched. The guy jumped off the bus. We went after the guy. And, we chased him down. We got the purse back and all this stuff. And then my other teacher was very angry at me and said he could have had a knife, he could have had a gun. It's not worth a purse to do that. But we felt it was a statement that you don't stand there while someone's getting hurt, you know. And so, karmically, weird stuff is going on at that moment. Deciding to help someone, even to use force, may not be successful. The other person may have a gun or a knife, and then it may turn out to be a disaster. Right? We had a similar incident at Diamond Mountain. You know, do we be firm with our principles of our university? And then someone got hurt because of that. But you have to act on the situation as you see it at that moment. If someone is hitting a woman and stealing her purse, you have to try to help her, even though you understand that her karma may be to be harmed. You see what I mean? Your responsibility is to try to stop the person. And then they say, use the amount of violence you would use if it was your own mother mugging the person.
But,
so, yeah.
But, one thing, but those people did run. I mean, they ran.
Yeah, they did run.
The refuge of the Buddha.
Yeah, and they didn't fight.
They got killed anyway.
Their being killed was not because they refused to fight. That was because they fought earlier. They made the wrong decision earlier. It's interesting, right? So we have to look at the real causes of things. If you decide to not respond with violence and you get hurt, it's not because you decided not to respond to violence. It's because you did decide to resort to violence earlier. So, but it's difficult. In the middle of the violence, it's difficult to do that. Being nonviolent cannot lead to injury. If you're injured because you were nonviolent, it's not because you were nonviolent. It's because earlier you were violent. But it's a difficult line to hold when you're being shot at. Or something like that. You know. So. Yeah, please.
You spoke a lot today about demons, angels, and powerful forces, and I was wondering if you could enlighten me a little bit about how that relates to your karma and you creating, in a certain way creating these forces, like, because when you say angels and demons, I automatically go to my Christian perception of those, and I was wondering, like, you didn't say that when you refer to these things, you're referring to these forces that we created, as a collective consciousness thing?
Yeah, we have created everything we see around us and everything that we experience, and even the battle of the forces that we're not aware of is also being created by us. So ultimately, all the good guys and all the bad guys are being created by us. And the war itself is being created by us. There's a joke. There was a writer called C.S. Lewis, a great Christian writer. And he said, in the Screwtape Letters, he said, one of the devil counts as his greatest achievement in the modern world the fact that people don't believe in him. That's his greatest achievement, you know, and it's true. So we think the idea of evil forces or demons or devils is, modern people aren't supposed to believe in them. And if you go to some country and people talk about devils, then you think they're primitive or something. But they do exist. And if you meditate a lot, you can become aware of them and see. They're not like, there's a joke in Tibet, they don't have horns. They're like, you're about to do your yoga, and your friend says, you know, there's the Bourne Legacy just came out. You know, there's a 4 o'clock showing. If we run, we can make it, you know. And you're about to do your yoga, and you go see the Bourne Legacy, which is, by the way, it was really good. They say that's the modern version of devils is like that. You know, you decided to be vegan and somebody offers you a pizza and you break down and you eat it. The friendly, reasonable, nice guy who lives next door got you to break your diet, and he's a demon, and he's coming from you because you did the same to somebody else. In a smaller way. You didn't give them a pizza, you gave them a Hostess Twinkie, something smaller. Really, but you're right. Yeah, they're all coming from us. And we can defeat them because they come from us. If they didn't come from us, it would be a problem. Okay. And when your meditation gets really good, you will see them. And they're for real and they're bad. But don't go around paranoid either. I mean, don't go around like, you know, don't go around like that. The way you fight a demon is you be nice and you be a good person. And that's what hurts them. So, yeah. Yes, please.
Remember, back in China, you were talking a lot about when somebody uses their debit card?
Yeah.
So my question is, for example, some people want to help on a homeless shelter or something.
Yeah.
And you're going to help by giving them food. So when you're doing that, you're collecting good karma, but they're using their credit card, their debit card.
Yeah, that's true.
You're giving them, right?
Yeah.
So is there a way that you can help these people, but not make them use their debit card? Because if you help them at that moment, they will go actually in debt, right?
Yeah, good,
so
yeah.
So it's a temporary help that can cause more harm to the future.
Yeah.
How you make you get a good karma by helping, but then them getting a good karma at the same time.
Did everybody hear that? Okay. Oh, so if I go to a homeless shelter and help somebody there, on the theory of the debit card, I am putting more cash into my account by helping the people at the homeless center. But the people whom I help, by me helping them, are losing more money on their debit card. So is there a way to make it win-win, for example? Like, does it always have to be, I'm adding to my credit card, debit card, by them losing on their debit card? They are accepting, they're using up karma by accepting food from you. Yeah, it is true, I think so. Depends on what their motivation is, but that's the Michael Wick parking lot, parking space. Do you know the Michael Wick parking space thing? There's this really bodhisattva guy in New York, and he refuses to take the first good parking space he sees because he doesn't want to use up the karma. No, he does that. Recently, he denied it to me, but I heard that. Anyway, yeah, I would say that all you could do, I think when you are generous to other people, you are always making, for the right reasons, then you are always making, your debit card is getting more cash in it. I like to think that if you help somebody long enough, like with the computer project, if you keep helping someone year after year and supporting them, that sooner or later they will respond to your example. Right? And they will start helping other people. I think there becomes a, what do you call it? It becomes fashionable to help other people. If you're in that climate where someone's constantly helping you. Like, I have a friend who likes to cook, and they're constantly cooking. Then finally I'm like, okay, I'll cook something. You know? And then I started cooking and handing out food to people. So I think maybe when you help a person who's homeless or something, maybe in your mind you think, I hope they will follow the example. And then my experience with the input project is that there's three levels of helping people, in my mind. One is just give them money. And then second is what Dan's doing, you pay them to do something good. So he's paying people to save Tibetan literature. And I think that's level two. And then level three would be to, after you have built up the trust by giving them money or by teaching them how to make their own money, then you say, now you want to know the real way to make money? And they're like, okay, now I trust you because you gave me money for years, then you gave me a skill. Now I trust you. Then you say, you teach the other refugees to do what you do with the computer and let them compete with you. And then they're like, well, that's going too far. You know, like, no, I mean, they will trust you if you have given to them for years. And then if you have given them a skill, then it builds up a certain amount of trust. And then you say, okay, now it's time for you to sacrifice what you know and give it to someone else. And you will be more successful. So I believe that it's a trust thing. And during the first two steps, they are losing. Their debit card is going down. But then you catch them on the third one. Okay? And it's a process. Yeah. Okay. Other question? You guys get awesome. Pasha.
I actually just wanted to clarify.
Okay. I'll repeat it if you want.
It's surprised to me that you're doing a good thing out of the goodness of your heart or meaning it well necessarily means that somebody receiving it actually gets their account.
It depends on their motivation. Yeah.
So you can't control.
I can't control. Pasha's saying, if I give money to a poor person, I'm always loading my debit card more. But is it always at their expense? Are they always losing debit card? Anytime you use any food or drink or money, you are losing debit. You are losing. Yeah, anytime. Then there's a bodhisattva vow about that. Do you guys remember?
Oh,
huh? No, no. Yeah, in the bodhisattva, or was it a tantric vow? I don't remember. You're not allowed to eat or wear a piece of clothing or use a car without thinking, how can I use this to help somebody? You know, like if I put on these pants today, you know, what will I do today that will help somebody? Like there's a bodhisattva vow that you're not allowed to use your debit card without intending it to help somebody else. And then you're not using your debit card. Then you're piling up new debit, new credit. Okay? So it's possible to use things which would normally make you lose karma in a way that, that actually increases them. Mm. Yeah, that's not bad. A really good way to help people would be to teach them to help other people so that when they use the help, they don't lose credit on their debit card. That's okay. There's a cool thing like in Tantra where if you have a really close heart lama, and I'm not suggesting that it's me, I'm just saying if you can find your heart lama, then you should always spend your money for them, and you just keep getting more and more money. It's really weird, you know. Like you have a choice to take them to an expensive restaurant or to a cheap restaurant. You take them to the expensive one because it honors that your heart teacher more, and you get more. You get much more money later. It's really weird. Like people, I'm not saying that with regard to myself, but with your own teacher, whoever's your own teacher, the more generous you are, the more financially independent you will be. And it's a cool practice. It's an interesting practice. Give them the best, and you will never want for money. It's very interesting. But that's a dangerous teaching because you can't get up and say, you know what I mean? I'm not saying that. I'm just saying I personally give my lama the best. You always have money. It's because of the karma of giving them the best, right? Okay. Maybe one more question. Yes, sir. Loud. Okay.
The fly on the cow patty. Then circles the stupa.
Yeah.
Right? And even though the fly is not aware of what's happening, they're somehow collecting their karma.
Yeah.
But the fly doesn't, I see the stupa as something that would have like a high, you know, it's a high holy object, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the fly doesn't see it that way. So how is the fly even collecting the karma?
Okay, so this is an old story that I forget though how it went, but anyway, some guy said this guy has no good karma, or he never did anything good, why is he having this nice thing happen to him? And then some lama said 10 lifetimes ago he was a fly and he landed on a cow pie and there was a big rainstorm. And the cow pie got carried down towards the temple, and then the water went around the temple. So he circumambulated the Buddha, riding on the cow pie, you know. So he has some good karma in his mind. So Tim's question is, but the fly doesn't have any perception of the good karma. He doesn't have any perception of the holiness of the place he's circled. I like to think, I'll give you a Rigpa Gotsung. What is that?
Parallel
reasoning. Somebody asked me if I walk across. Do you know that the monks used to do a summer retreat, right? Even in Serra, we do the ritual for the summer retreat and then nobody does the summer retreat. But in the old days, monks spent the summer indoors. They made an agreement to spend the summer indoors. Do you know why?
Bugs.
Because of bugs. yeah, because of air conditioning. No, because they would step on more bugs. They would kill more bugs if they were walking around in the summer. So they would make an agreement. They stay for 2 or 3 months in retreat in the summer just to protect the bugs, you know. Then the question comes up, if you walk across the lawn and you kill a bunch of bugs, do you collect bad karma or not? There's no intention to harm anybody, you know. You don't see anything get crushed, you know. You're just like trying to stop the ice cream truck or something, and you running across the lawn. Like, so there's no evil intent to hurt anybody. Do you collect bad karma? Then if you had come to the Guadalajara teachings, and if you had one of those orange cups that said, Shri Sampajora Tantuk. So they did a very cool thing. They made cups for all the participants in the retreat that had the 4 steps to a karmic path. So there are 4 steps to a complete karma. And they are recognizing the object correctly. Well, I shouldn't say that. Having a powerful karmic object, doing it towards a powerful karmic object, having an intention to hurt them, then actually hurting them, and then afterwards owning the action, saying, I'm glad I killed them. Okay? So in the case of walking across the lawn, are any of those 4 present? There's this one. There's the... You did kill them. You did kill them. Okay? It wasn't intentional. You didn't select them. And you weren't happy about it afterwards. But you did kill them. So you get some karma. Okay? The main karma, though, is intention. So you will get some karma from walking across the lawn and killing creatures without thinking about it. You will collect some karma. And by circling a stupa on a riding a cow pie, you do get some karma. Yeah.
I guess my question is that a stupa is not a stupa from its own side.
Yeah, I know. I know. He's saying that the only thing that makes a stupa holy is the perception of the person who's relating to it, something like that. The stupa is not self-existently holy. I think maybe you could say that because of so many people consider it holy or something like that, and you're in that place like that. There's nothing self-existently holy about a Buddha tooth or something in a... That's true. Or is there? I don't know. Is there some power to the Buddha's tooth by proximity to a holy being after a certain amount of time? I don't know. Is a Buddha's tooth holy? I think so. Just by proximity, right? By being around it. Like they say, if you get a chance to meditate where a holy being has meditated, that something has rubbed off on that place, right? And the opposite also. How about that? Whatever's in the stupa, what makes the stupa traditionally is that they'll use the bones or the teeth or something of a holy person. And I think there is some vibration there of goodness from that person. I think so. Okay. But it's a good question.